You got a chance to meet Ken?
Yeah.
Good. Good. We don't have a hearing enhancement system in here, but we can get one. Does anyone need it? Okay, can you hear me all right back there? I just decided to go with the arrangement of the room. The arrangement of the room really has no bearing on the experience that you and I will have in the next few minutes. And before I tell them to start the tape, what we're going to do is we're going to start now, and it will be a fairly disciplined period of time. And you're going to have several opportunities for some fairly intensive experiential kinds of things during this period of time. Anna, experiencing awareness. And I'm going to come back to sadhana and what that's all about at the end, because maybe by that time you might want to remember it, and hearing it at the end will make it easier for you to go out from here and do whatever you want to do with it. I'd like to be aware of the fact that we all come in here with certain kinds of assumptions. Generally, I think it's understood that I'm here teaching spirituality or spiritual exercises or the approach through the heart or the spirit into what is. And it's very interesting to note the kind of how expectations and assumptions govern what our experience is. So I want to read you a couple of stories. And at the end, you'll know where these stories came from. The first one has to do with three wise men. They set out on a journey. Even though they were considered wise in their own country, they were humble enough to hope that travel would broaden their minds. They had barely crossed into a neighboring country when they saw a skyscraper in the distance. What could this enormous object be, they asked themselves. The obvious procedure would have been to go and find out. But no, that might be too dangerous. Suppose it was something that exploded as one approached. It was altogether wiser to decide what it was before finding out. Various theories were put forward, examined, and on the basis of their past experiences, rejected. And finally, it was determined, also on the basis of past experience, of which they had an abundant supply, that the object in question, whatever it was, could only have been placed there by giants. And this led them to the conclusion that it would be safer to avoid this country altogether. So they went back home, having added something to their fund of experience. And the other one has to do with a little old Jewish lady and a Swedish young man. A little old Jewish lady sits down in a plane next to a big Swede and keeps staring at it. Finally, she turns to him and says, "Pardon me, are you Jewish?" "No." And a few minutes later, she turns to him again. "You can tell me, you know. You are Jewish, aren't you?" "Most certainly not." She keeps studying him for some minutes and then says again, "I can tell you are Jewish." In order to get rid of the annoyance, the man says, "Okay, so I'm Jewish." She looks at him again, shakes her head, and says, "You certainly don't look it." The other morning, I was on my porch at Chalet 6. I was just sitting there. I wasn't doing anything, nothing intentional at all, just sitting there. And I noticed a cat. Someone here in the village has a sort of semi-calico cat. And I saw it and I thought, oh, I miss my fat, sluggish, 20-pound cat, so I think I'll watch this cat for a while. So the cat took a few steps and then sort of went into that lower crouch that a cat can go into and was just sort of sitting there by that big circle up there at the top of the chalet area. And the next thing I knew, a sparrow flew down and landed about 8 feet from the cat in the dust and the gravel and began to peck around looking for stuff, I suppose, for its gizzard. And there it was, and the cat now went into the real crouch. And the cat did not move, and the sparrow pecked around for a good 5 minutes without ever moving further from the cat. And finally, after 5 minutes, the sparrow made a couple of hops toward the cat, totally unaware of the cat being there. The cat made one of those instantaneous charges. The bird, I've never seen this happen before, the bird didn't fly away the way a bird normally would when they've got time to think. The bird just kind of fluttered upward, which told me, oh, so that's how cats catch birds. Because the cat made its leap, hit the ground, and in the same instant was back up in the air like this, weaving around with its paws. It may have been declawed, and just missed the bird. In fact, I think it hit the bird, but the bird got away. Now, what was happening? This was an exercise in awareness. Here is the bird. Perhaps the interior of my being, the interior of your being. Here is the bird. And here is the cat watching the bird. And here am I watching the cat. And here am I watching me, watching the cat, watching the bird. Do you see what's going on here in awareness? Several things. What we're going to do in a moment is to watch the bird, as it were, the bird of the present moment, the simple isness of this moment. But we're also going to be watching ourselves, watching the moment, and there will be other things going on. That's just an introduction or a little analogy to this experience. You might want to think of yourself as the cat watching the bird, and you'll be altogether aware also of yourself watching the cat and of yourself watching yourself watch the cat. And this may all sound very complicated, but when you get into the experience, you know what it is. It's like being in the theater and something terribly funny happens and you break into laughter and suddenly you're aware of the fact that you're laughing. You're watching yourself laughing at the moment in the theater. It happens all the time. And sometimes that becomes very disturbing to us because then we say, oh, there must be something wrong with me. I'm not really present to the moment. Oh, well, we'll see. Very quickly, I'd like you to do a couple of things with me. If you would stand up, this is the first phase of awareness. And we're not going to have to take a lot of space for this because we're only going to move our heads and our necks. And the first thing to do, and I'll do the counting, so don't worry about it. The first thing to do is close your eyes and let your head fall forward until your chin comes at least close to your upper chest. And just hold it there. And be aware of that. Now with your eyes closed, let your head tip back. Don't force it, just tip back and be aware of that feeling, perhaps in your throat. Just be aware of this. Now let your head come back straight up and let it simply tip to the right. Not any twisting motion, just tip to the right. Imagine it resting on your right shoulder. Be aware of this. And then let your head tip to the left as if to rest on your left shoulder. And be aware of this. In the last two movements, bring your head straight up again and now turn your head to the right. If not as far as you can, then as far as you can. And be aware of this. And then let your head turn to the left. Not a circular motion, but just turn to the left. And be aware of this. Very good. Let's sit down again. You probably noticed as you were doing this, or this, or this, or this, or this, or this, that you were aware of that. And if you stop now for a moment and just feel it, there is some residual awareness of that. But also, as you did it, you perhaps had the experience of being aware of your trying to be aware. And you might hear a voice, or there would be a physical sensation that you would become aware of, or perhaps your balance was a little bit off, or you were aware of your eyes being closed. Now, just a question to put into the system, is it somehow wrong that there were those other awarenesses? Does that mean that we weren't really present to the event? And what will we do to those kinds of interruptions, those kinds of little disturbances? What do we do with those? Do we have to get rid of them? All right. We're going to just keep moving right now into an experience which is going to really require just your participation. Remember, assumptions sometimes get in the way of what's going on. If we have come here assuming that somehow something is going to change for us dramatically, or that there's got to be some kind of product that comes out of this, then our assumptions are going to get in the way of our experience. Perhaps it's just enough in these minutes together to experience what is. Remember, what is inseparably related to the one who is. I am that I am. Could have been said, I is that I is. Right? All right, I want you to just to get into a comfortable posture. I don't care how you're sitting. I'd like to have you wiggle around until you find that you're in a position that you think you can maintain, get this now, for 10 minutes. Said this morning about the matter of introducing silence into worship. This will give an experience of silence and perhaps also an indication of how we need to teach so-called silence. 10 minutes now, and whether or not you want to participate, the only thing that I ask each time is simply that you close your eyes so that you know you're not being watched. And to the extent that I need to keep my eyes open, I will not be looking at you. I will be looking down at this table. So you're not going to be watched by anybody. So if you just close your eyes. What I'm going to invite you to do is to keep silence for a period of 10 minutes, beginning now. First, try to attain silence, as total a silence as possible of heart and mind. And then, having attained silence, expose yourself to whatever revelation it brings. And at the end of 10 minutes, I'm going to invite you to open your eyes and share as you wish, if you wish, what you did and what you experienced in these 10 minutes of seeking and attaining silence. Okay, let yourself begin to come back out of wherever you are into this room. Let your eyes open as they will. If you need to wiggle a little bit, this would be a good time to sort of stretch and well, how was the silence? Let's just take a couple of minutes. Anybody, what was your experience?
Well, I started singing Ubi Kari.
Uh-huh.
And then I kept singing more songs, and then I was praying, and I was aware that I hadn't prayed for my prayer group, that I missed it and all these things, but I prayed, and I was very comfortable.
All right, now, would anyone here call that silence? Would you call that silence within?
Sure.
Okay. Someone else's experience with silence. Anybody attain silence?
I would call it that because I didn't program anything.
Certainly, it was not the absence of something in you that meant silence. Yes.
You're talking about being nonverbal within yourself?
Say what you will about it.
I was thinking of Scott's rooms. And
okay.
And John, and then just going through rooms and observing very quietly. Let's not talk. Nonverbal. I was doing something, but
okay.
It was nonverbal.
Obviously not an absence of doing or
no.
Things going on. Silence, anyone experience just simple, radical, total silence in the form of non-noise, non-thought, non-movement within? Anybody get to that point?
Well, I sort of started to fall asleep.
Okay. Glad you mentioned it, because in spiritual exercises, any time that you're part of a group or alone, if you fall asleep, Just know that it's okay. That's a rule, Nancy. That's an inside joke from Bible study. It's okay to fall asleep because that's what you need to do at that moment. Many times in a group exercise like this, you'll hear people begin to snore. And initially there's humor and there's laughter. And then it simply becomes part of the moment. Anyone else experience with the silence?
Every now and then I would start to feel as though some of the inner dialogue would cease. And then I would felt as though silence was being approached, then it'd be like people calling the voice in the other room, and I'd be trying to say, okay, let it go, it's there, just let it be, but then I'd go through this process again of trying to, I need help with trying to figure out what is silence, because
okay.
I'm trying to, as a hymn would come forth or something like that, I would go with it, and then I think, well, this isn't silence, my mind is busying itself, it's keeping me busy.
That's absolutely wonderful. You're just moving right along. Anyone else aware of Paul lecturing next door?
Part of the time.
Part of the time. Okay. Part of the time.
And then it would be gone. Yeah.
That's interesting. Was anyone aware of only one thing the entire 10 minutes?
No.
There were a variety of things. There was motion.
There was thumping on the floor underneath them.
Okay. I was hoping that whatever they had been throwing down there earlier that was hitting pipes or something like that, I was reading in the library for a couple of hours, I was hoping that would happen because it would contribute to our experience. But the lecturing next door and some movement upstairs was there. Someone said this morning in Bible study, the problem with silence in the liturgy is that there are little children there, for example, or there might be the car going by outside, or maybe the organist happens to sort of fall asleep and the foot hits the pedal and boom, or something like that. So therefore, the assumption is it doesn't work. But silence is not that we're talking about is not the absence of sound. It is not the absence of interruptions. Silence that we're talking about is awareness. To be simply aware of Paul's voice. Thank you, God, for Paul's voice. And then return to the awareness. Observing everything that passes through, aware of it, becomes an awareness of the one who is in all that is. It's not an absence of sound. It's an absence of that within us which makes judgments or tries to attain some godlike state. It's simply being aware. I want to repeat. I told, and not as well as it could be told, a story this morning in Bible study about this matter of sound. When Brother Bruno was at prayer one night, he was disturbed by the croaking of a bullfrog. All his attempts to disregard the sound were unsuccessful, so he shouted from his window, "Quiet, I'm at my prayers." Now, Brother Bruno was a saint, so his command was instantly obeyed. Every living creature held its voice so as to create a silence that would be favorable to prayer. But now another sound intruded on Bruno's worship, an inner voice that said, "Maybe God is as pleased with the croaking of that frog as with the chanting of your psalms?" "What can please the ears of God in the croak of a frog?" was Bruno's scornful reminder. But the voice refused to give up. "Why would you think God invented that sound?" Paul's voice, the steps upstairs, feeling and creaking in within us, the beating of our heart. Bruno decided to find out why. He leaned out of his window and gave the order, "Sing!" The bullfrog's measured croaking filled the air to the ludicrous accompaniment of all the frogs in the vicinity. And as Bruno attended to the sound, their voices ceased to jar. For he discovered that if he stopped resisting them, they actually enriched the silence of the night. With that discovery, Bruno's heart became harmonious with the universe, and for the first time in his life, he understood what it means to pray. Awareness of what is, whether it's the voice there, whether it's awareness of our restlessness of 10 minutes, wondering how long that is. Awareness of what is the window that leads to the awareness of what is. It is like me watching me, watch the cat, watch the bird. We always want to go beyond what is. If there is for me any essential meaning in the story of the fall in the Garden of Eden, it is that we all want to go beyond what is. Because our minds say there is something better, there is some product that ought to come out of this. Have you wondered already whether you're going to get anything out of this 55-minute period? You go into the Bible study with Nancy in the morning, what am I going to get out of this? We go into worship. Now, what am I going to get out of this? Am I going to feel relaxed? Am I going to feel worshipful? Am I going to be able to praise God? Another story. Once upon a time, there was a stone cutter. Each day he went up to the mountains to cut stones, and while he worked, he sang, for though he was a poor man, he desired no more than he had, so he had not a care in the world. But one day he was called to work on the mansion of a nobleman. And when he saw the magnificence of the mansion, he experienced the pain of desire for the first time in his life, and he said with a sigh, "If only I were rich." Then I would not have to earn my living in sweat and toil as I do now. Imagine his astonishment when he heard a voice say, "Your wish has been granted. Henceforth, anything you desire will be given to you." He did not know what to make of the words till he returned to his hut that evening and found in its place a mansion as magnificent as the one he had been working on. So the stonecutter gave up cutting stones and began to enjoy the life of the rich. One day, when the afternoon was hot and humid, he happened to look out his window and saw the king go by with a large retinue of noblemen and slaves. He thought, "How I wish I were a king myself, sitting in the cool of the royal carriage." His wish was promptly carried out, and he found himself reclining in the comfort of the royal carriage. But the carriage turned out to be warmer than he had assumed it to be. He looked out of his carriage window and began to marvel at the power of the sun, whose heat could penetrate even the thick walls of the carriage. "I wish I were the sun," he said to himself. Once again, his wish was granted, and he found himself sending out waves of heat into the universe. All went well for a while. Then on a rainy day, he attempted to pierce through a thick bank of clouds and could not. So he got himself changed into a cloud and glorified in his power to keep the sun away till he turned into rain and found, to his annoyance, a mighty rock that blocked his path, so he was obliged to flow around it. "What?" he cried. "A mere rock more powerful than I? Well, then I wish to be a rock." So there he was, standing tall upon a mountainside. He barely had time to rejoice in his fine figure, however, when he heard strange clipping sounds proceeding from his feet. He looked down and, to his dismay, found a tiny human being sitting there engaged in cutting chunks of stone from his feet. "What?" he shouted. "A puny creature like that more powerful than an imposing rock like me? I want to be a man." So he found he was once again a stonecutter, going up into the mountain to cut stone, earning his living in sweat and toil, but with a song in his heart because he was content to be what he was and to live by what he had. There are some passages in Scripture, and particularly from the book of Matthew, that talk about awareness in Jesus. There are a lot of passages about quiet. Now, I'm going to quickly give you a couple of those. But in Matthew 12, there is the story When Jesus tells the people, Matthew 12, 9 to, okay. Jesus goes on and he enters the synagogue. And there's this man with a withered hand. And now comes the episode about whether it's lawful to heal a person with a withered hand on the Sabbath. And of course he does, he stretches it out. But the Pharisees went out and took counsel against him how to destroy him. Jesus, aware of this. All right? Matthew 16. Nothing like India paper Bibles. Matthew 16. The disciples are out ahead, but they've forgotten the bread. Jesus says, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, and they discuss among themselves, we have no bread. But Jesus, aware of this, says, O ye of little faith, why do you discuss among yourselves the fact that you have no bread, etc., etc.? Matthew 22. Now the Pharisees are taking counsel as to how to entangle Jesus in his talk. They send their disciples to him, Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully. Tell us then, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, why put me to the test, you hypocrites? And finally, Matthew 26. Jesus is at Bethany in the house of Simon, the leper. The woman comes up to him with the alabaster flask, a very expensive ointment. She pours it on his head. The people at the table are all indignant. They're talking to each other, why this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for a large sum and given to the poor. But Jesus, aware of this, it's like the passage that we heard about where Jesus is aware of power flowing out of him when the woman with the flow of blood touches his garment. Aware, always aware of what is. Jesus' life was filled with noise and interruption and disturbance. But he's aware of it and lives in it. One of my favorite passages is Ecclesiastes 4, 6. Better a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and a striving after wind. But that's quietness. Quietness can lead to awareness, it may not. But the kind of quietness we're talking about leads to awareness. There are other passages, I'd be glad to share them with you, but I'm really watching our clock because we're going to stay right with our time. Guess what? As of about right now, I'm getting to miss out on 20 minutes of dish team. Wonderful. What we're really talking about is the Zen, if you will, of Holden. And why not? What it means to be aware at Holden. There is the Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Persig that was a very popular book. I taught it once to an English class at Augustana. It's a serious book. Then there's also Fred Roy's book, The Zen of Running. I read that about every couple of years and I give it to our track coach who's coming out here in August to teach black literature. Zen of running. Why not the Zen of holding? The awareness of washing dishes. Do you know that one of the fundamental principles of Zen Buddhism, and don't be afraid of Zen Buddhism, one of the fundamental principles is that when washing dishes, wash the dishes. That's like when sitting, sit. The great story told by the woman who is describing her rabbi to another woman. My rabbi is so marvelous that he can literally fly. And the other woman says, my rabbi? Well, when my rabbi sits, he sits. And when my rabbi walks, he walks. When washing dishes, I'm going to try this in a few minutes. Wash the dishes. I was watching one of the members of the volunteer staff cleaning the jacuzzi with a long wand with a vacuum on the end of it like this, and I was just coming back from my run in the morning, and I ran by, and I wish I would have kept my mouth shut, because what I said, you know, I had no business doing it, but I said, there is such a thing as Zen, the Zen of cleaning a jacuzzi. To just be aware of each sweeping motion of that cleaning vacuum wand. I'm sorry I said that. It wasn't the right time, because there was a young woman sitting in the pool, and the man cleaning the pool was like the cat watching the bird. In Seattle right now, there are city buses that have an advertisement on the back. Maybe Nancy and Ken and others who live in Seattle have seen that. I think it says, if you want to see all the places, see this place. And it's an advertisement for the Space Needle, because you can look out and so forth. Awareness of what is the entryway to awareness of all that is. And when one becomes aware of whatever it is, whether it's a slight itch or a noise of Paul's lecture, that is an entryway into what all is, because take away the noise of Paul's lecture, make it totally non-existent, or the itch goes away totally, or a particular particle in the universe goes away totally, and guess what? Everything goes. Because everything in that moment that is a part of everything that is. So we're not really talking about silence, we're talking about awareness. Chris Rognes is a volunteer member of the Holden staff. I just met her a couple of days ago. And this is a little serendipity now that's happened. I meet her, I say, well, are you related to all of the Rognes's in the old ELC? Yes, Alvin Rognes is my uncle. Another person, Bruce Johnson from the Bay Area, is telling me about something in George MacDonald. So I'm thinking about George MacDonald. I'm in the library. I pick up a book by George MacDonald. Maybe I'll find what Bruce tells me about. And here is a book by George MacDonald, a 19th century wonderful religious mystical person who lived a lot in the present moment, called Diary of an Old Soul, with an introduction by Chris's uncle, Alvin, Chris's cousin, Paul. Coming back from Oxford University in 1960, was killed in an accident. And when his father, Alvin Rognes, got his son Paul's wallet, there were two prayers written in there, well-worn in the paper. He tried to track them back and discovered that, yes, they were out of Diary of an Old Soul by George MacDonald, so forth. Tight little world, isn't it? I mean, there must be something to the quantum theory of particles. Everything is somehow related. So I picked it up, and lo and behold, what do I find? But something that has to do with being present to what is. Sometimes I wake, and lo, I have forgot, and drifted out upon an ebbing sea. My soul that was at rest now resteth not. For I am with myself and not with thee. Truth seems a blind moon in a glaring morn. We've had a couple of those moon sights here because they were up in the morning. Where nothing is but sick heart vanity, O thou who knowest, save thy child forlorn. What it's like to be outside of what really is. Nancy.
Can I have another connection?
Please.
Have you ever seen the watercolors that Arnold Plotten did of some of those poems?
Nope.
Arnold Plotten was an artist in Ocala. She did the altar and the pulpit in the village center.
Really?
And a couple other things around here. And then she died about 12 years ago now. And as he was dying, he died of cancer. He used
clock comes of those poems. And Augsburg has available a videotape that has, they have carpet and outline given about the book. And then they just, and it's good, I mean, it's done well for meditation and reflection. All the Arnold Plot and watercolors. That just became available last year, available on reporters.
That's very helpful. Thanks, Nancy. This is 366 little sonnets by George MacDonald that you can read through the year. And they all have to do with really what is and a celebration of the present moment. Alvin Ragnos thought that George MacDonald was a person who truly lived in the present. Well, what have we been doing here? We have been doing the exercises of Anthony DeMello. Little D-E, capital M-E-L-L-O. He was the director of the Sadhana Institute of Pastoral Counseling in Pune, India. He was a Jesuit. He was 54 years old and lecturing at Fordham University on June 2nd, 1987, and he died of a heart attack. And a friend of mine, a Jesuit, and I were just in the process of negotiating to bring him to the Middle West to engage in a sort of an ecumenical spiritual institute. He died. But he wrote lots of things. And when I was invited to come out here this summer and to deal with spirituality, I knew immediately that if nothing else, I wanted to just introduce to brothers and sisters here Anthony DeMello. He has written lots of books. There, you know, one could stack them up, but they are all of fairly recent origin, and the most basic and best known is called Sadhana. Sadhana, S-A-D-H-A-N-A. Mary ordered some copies. They're up in the bookstore. It's a little book that looks like this. It's blue. Sadhana, A Way to God, Christian Exercises in Eastern Form. Anthony DeMello, the Jesuit Christian, was able to integrate the Zen approaches and the Christian approaches to the present, to the now, to the am, who am, in a very unique way. He is surely one day to be a saint. His tapes and books and so forth are all over. But Fordham University in New York has created a DeMello Center, and St. Louis University in St. Louis, a Jesuit school like Fordham, has created the We and God Spirituality Center, where they're focusing on Anthony DeMello. And they're collecting all of the stuff, and they're making it available to people who want to participate in these events. This was awareness. And before we're done, we're going to be into fantasy and devotion, and all of the time, we're going to be involved in the Zen of Holden Village. So thank you for coming. You can't believe the amount that was cut out of this last 55 minutes, and I'm aware of it now. But if there's a little taste, if you picked up the fact that to be quiet inside essentially means to be aware of what is, and that you can do that even when you're washing dishes, so you don't have to be sitting here doing it, and that if you're doing it, you just may chance be surprised by the one whom you meet, then it's been a really good afternoon. So thanks very much for coming.
An old Zen verse that runs, if you understand, things are just as they are. If you don't understand, things are just as they are.
That's a story in Anthony DeMello, believe it or not, Doug. When a person has been enlightened, washing dishes is still washing dishes, and garbology is still garbology. But what has changed is enlightenment, for now these things are filled with wonder. Very similar. Thanks. It's 10 to 5. Yeah, go ahead. Take
one. I was wondering which of the books you would suggest for a person who hasn't read them all yet.
Oh, I think this is a very good one. Oh, absolutely. Sure.
What were the stories from? I only have that one.
He's got several story books. This one. These are the storybooks.
Oh, Taking Flight.
These
yeah,
three.
Okay.
1 Minute Wisdom and the Heart of the Enlightened. That's the only one. That's Sadhana. And then, in addition to that, he has
these
Wellsprings and the Song of the Bird, which are all
I'm going to have to get
exercises.
If you say mine was not silent.
Oh, no. I would say you were very aware. That's the
because
that's the
it, to me it was very different. It all of a sudden it sort of happened. I did not say I was playing or singing. It just happened.
See, what could have happened is someone would have said, well, that's not silence. You were thinking about that. But in fact, when you were aware of it, and you were allowing them to be, and not making a judgment.